Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to the Dear Lovejoy podcast, sponsored by Cooker, spelt Quooker, pronounced Cooker, 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. It's brilliant. Thank you very much to them for sponsoring this podcast. And it is another special.
Woohoo!
Yes, today's guest is Chris Kamara, better known as Cammy. Or is he better known as Cammy? Anyway, we usually do the intros after we've done the interview with him, but Chris Kamara's on the PR trail at the moment because he's got a Christmas single coming out. And he's
Christmas Kamara.
Christmas Kamara. And he's... Well, he's a little late.
That's all right.
It's fine with us.
He is worth waiting for. He is a national treasure.
I've known him for 20-odd years from when I worked at Sky on Soccer M, and he's one of life's good guys. So we're going to talk to him, hopefully. I'll talk to him all about working in football, about his amazing career, how he ended up on Ninja Warriors, and now how he's turned himself into a singer. What would you call it? A crooner?
Yeah.
We've been listening to his Christmas single.
It's great.
And you can hit a note. Here he is. Here's Chris Kamara.
Woo!
This is just a guide to modern life. Modern life is hard to get just right. It can frustrate you and annoy, and if it does, right into Dear Lovejoy.
Chris, thank you very much for coming to my kitchen today. You're a busy man at the moment.
I am indeed.
Doing a lot of promo for your Christmas album.
It's amazing, Tim. It is really good. When I got the call, would you like to sing with a 22-piece big band and a conductor, I thought it was a wind-up. I really did. I said to my agent, we're going to go into Silver Screen Records in Camden and start singing, and then Ant and Dec are going to come out. And he said to me, no. And I said, I know they are. He went, it's bona fide. I've had a look at Silver Screen Records. They're bona fide. I said, yeah, but they do their homework, Ant and Dec. So they'll have done that in the right place and everything. So when I got there to Silver Screen Records, met the fellow who was in charge of it, Adam Greenup. He said, would you mind just going downstairs to the cellar and singing along to a song? You know, even though I think you can sing really well, we still want to make sure that your voice would be good for the big band. Straight away, I thought, I smell a rat here. And I went downstairs, and they played Let It Snow, and I sang along to Let It Snow. And then I still kept waiting. Are they going to jump out? Are they going to jump out? My agent kept saying, they're not. They're not. It's bona fide. It's genuine. And the rest is history. We've been working on it since April.
All right, before we get stuck into that again, I forgot, I buy all my guests a present. I bought you white wine. I buy everyone red wine, but I thought I'd get you white. I don't know why, but you seem to me to... I know you drink beer, don't you?
I do drink beer, but I also drink white wine.
Do you?
I do, yeah. Red wine or not? I was a big red wine fan, but I've been getting a bit of heartburn lately. Ah. But I don't get it from beer and white wine.
Some of the ex-pros have a reputation of being able to have a few beers. There used to be quite a lot of fun years ago. I wonder if it's changed prior to Soccer Saturday, a few of the boys used to get, you know, obviously you're out travelling around the country, but some of the boys used to go to the hotel and have a few beers before that. It's always nice spirits, isn't it, on the show?
It is nice spirits, and I will be doing that this evening. Having a few beers with Jeff and Charlie and Tomo.
You get on well, don't you?
Oh, we do. You know, I was saying this to other people. All the players, most of the players, I should say, nearly all the players who you've been part of a team with over the years, you know, Swindon, Portsmouth, Brentford, Stoke, Leeds, Middlesbrough, Luton, all those teams, you get a great camaraderie with your teammates.
Yeah.
When you finish playing football, you hardly see anyone.
Yeah.
But we've had a team together, the Soccer Saturday team, since 2002.
Yeah.
We all know each other inside out. We all know what each other's about. And we die for each other. And it's even better than the team spirit that we've had in the teams over the years.
Yeah. They always have a laugh, don't they, all those boys? Right, I'll get back to that later. Let's carry on with the singing. So how did they find out that you could sing in the first place?
I did All Together Now. Last Christmas Eve it was on telly. And it's Jerry Halliwell and Rob Beckett. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there's 100 cabaret people, comedians, yeah, singers, the whole lot,
yeah,
are the audience. And you have to come out and sing a song, and after 30 seconds, if they like it, they stand up and press the buzzer, and out of everyone who stands up, you go through. So my agent rang me, Simon Dent, and he said, do you want to do it? And I went, yeah, of course. So he went, what do you want to sing? I said, oh, Brown Eyed Girl, I've seen the programme. By the time I get to the la-la-las, they'll all join in and jump up and yeah, everything. So he come back to me and he said, good news and bad news. So I said, oh, yeah. So he said, the good news, you're in.
Yeah.
The bad news is they don't want you to sing Brown Eyed Girl. I said, why? He said, there's too many people singing sing-along songs because you do a ballad. And I went, no, not a chance. I've watched the programme. No way. Not in a million years. So he went back to them and he said, no. Anyway, they agreed to pay me half of the fee that they already agreed. So he said to me, will you sing a ballad now? I went, yeah, of course I will. So I said, it's got to be Elton John's Your Song. So he went back to them and said, yeah, I'll sing your song. So I sang your song. So it's amazing. Fate plays such a big part in my life. It has since, you know, when I was in the Navy and got bought out by Portsmouth. Fate once again took over because Adam Greenup from Silver Screen Records was watching me singing your song and he thought my voice would be perfect to sing with a 22-piece big band. And
have you always sung though?
Yes. Yeah, I've always liked to sing.
What, just in the shower or did you ever do anything else apart from that?
Well, I did the official song for England for 2012. We had a problem with that because I was Sky and the BBC wouldn't play it. It's changed these days. It's yeah, amazing because you can work for all these channels now. Well, you couldn't. You remember yeah, that, Tim. Yeah. Back in the day, if you were Sky, that was it.
Yeah.
So it hardly got any airplay. So that was called Sing for England. And yeah, I've got a small share in a bar in Tenerife, which is an Irish bar, which I always get up and sing. I always do Brown Eyed Girl. That's my go-to song. I always sing a couple of Elton John songs occasionally, but with it being an Irish bar.
Well, when you're standing in front of the orchestra, though, because I've seen that, by the way, you can see the footage online, it's absolutely brilliant, you singing in front of it. Did you never get sort of like an imposter syndrome at some stage going, look at me, because you've come a long way since the Navy, haven't you?
Oh, you're not wrong. Well, they told me to go to Angel Studios in Islington to sing with the big band. So I went along there and I don't get nervous, Tim, about anything. Not anymore, because everything's a bonus. It's great. It's fun.
Really?
Okay. I enjoy doing stuff. And so I have a laugh and don't treat it too seriously and try to be entertaining. So I get there and the 22-piece big band and the conductor's all there. And I'm thinking, crikey, these lads have played the Royal Albert Hall and ladies. These lads and ladies have played the Royal Albert Hall, the Prague Philharmonic, and all of a sudden, look how far you've come down. Cammy stood in front of me. But they were magnificent, every one of them, and they were so good, and they were so brilliant. The problem I had, I didn't have any in-ears. In-ears?
Yeah.
However you say that. And so the conductor kept looking at me for my cue to join in, and I couldn't hear because I was just listening to the music. It was so good. Anyway, eventually stopped everybody and came over to me and said, "You don't need in ears. Just watch me and I will cue you when to sing."
Wow.
And so I ended up doing that. Yeah, so he cued me when to come in as well as everyone else. And it was so good.
You're very good. I tell you what, Mark, who plays a bit of music, he does the theme tune to this and stuff. I played it to him just before you came over. I've listened to it, obviously. And he was like, "Oh, I wonder what this is like." And he went, "That's good. He's good. You're great. Good. You can definitely hit a note, can't you?"
Oh,
you're very good.
Thank you. Honestly, the response has been amazing. It's really been good. And I've obviously sung along with it. On TalkSport and one or two of the other shows. And so it's not auto-tuned. What it is what it gets.
Yeah. What songs have you got on the album? You've got your new single, which is Here's to Christmas. What other songs have you put in?
We've got Let It Snow, Winter Wonderland, Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, Santa Baby, Frosty the Snowman, brilliant, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Well, it's the Christmas album you stick on, isn't it? Mark and I were just discussing a few minutes ago, I always put Dean Martin on at Christmas, or I put the Motown Christmas Songs album mm-hmm. on, because it's just the songs you want, and you want that feeling, and that's what you're doing.
They're brilliant, and hopefully it'll be a go-to song for everybody on Christmas Day.
It's when's it actually come out? Is it out now or is it
15th of November? It's
15th
out
of November. Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? You were just saying a minute ago, everything's a bonus. We worked together about 20 odd years ago now, wasn't
it? Wasn't it great?
It was brilliant. So I was producer of Soccer AM, and we were looking for people to do the outside broadcast, which is basically what we had to do. Is from Soccer AM, which is on Sky Sports, if you don't know that, on a Saturday morning. We had to throw to the live match, which had just started at that time, hadn't it? So there was going to be a live match somewhere around the country, or there'll be a match around the country. And we were looking for people to actually come on the show and talk. And you, I don't know how much you know about this, but everyone would turn us down because they would have to... We were on air... What time did we finish? I don't know, 12:30 or something. And the matches were kicking off at 3. Actually, it was before the live matches, wasn't it? Because was just the matches.
But some of them were kicking off early. Some of the championship matches were kicking off early,
Oh, that's right, yeah. But we would ask people to do it, and they're all... Understandably, they're like, "Oh, I'm not going to come all the way early into the grounds just for you lot when, you know, I can't be bothered to do it," sort of thing. But you always went, "Yeah, I'll do it. I'd love to do it." And you then took it and embraced it so much and made it into such a big thing that suddenly all the others were phoning us up all the time going, "I'd like a bit of that. I'd like..." But what did you think when we started asking you to do it?
Well, initially, obviously, I thought, will it work? Won't it work? You know, my initial thoughts when Ian Condren rang me for Soccer Saturday and said, "We want you to go and be our out and about man." I said, well, people are still getting their head round people watching TV and relaying that onto TV. And he said, well, do you want to do it or don't you? And I went, yeah. And then the following year, when you said to me, we want someone to go around the grounds in the morning, go around the dressing rooms, have a look at things, poke around these places, have a bit of fun. And I thought, will it work? Won't it work? And we tried it. And it was such a massive hit.
It was. But in fairness, it was. I didn't really know what you were ever going to do. It was my favourite, because Soccer AM, because I used to produce it and write it, I used to know what was going on everywhere. My favourite bit of the show was always throwing to you, because we had no idea what you were going to do. And it was always so entertaining, because you'd do stuff that no one was allowed to do, really. The players would be warming up or something, or their players would part. You'd start talking to them and go, "Are you in the team today?" and stuff like that.
Yeah. Revealing the shirts and...
But
the best one ever was the one that Harry Redknapp mentioned on I'm a Celebrity.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? It was absolutely magnificent. So we were doing the cross to Soccer AM, and I went and asked Harry. They were kicking off at 1, and we did ours at about 12:15.
Yeah.
So you must have been on till about 12:30.
I think 12:30 was 12:30, yeah.
So it's 12:15. The players are getting changed and ready for the warm-up. And Harry says, yeah, just go where you want. So the first port of call outside Harry's office, as soon as we go live, I go back into Harry's office and him and Jim Smith are reading the Racing Post. 45 minutes before kickoff. And he's got a TV on And Harry looks at the Racing Post and then looked up at the TV and saw that I've just burst into his office.
Yeah, that was funny.
And he mentioned it on I'm a Celeb as one of the, you know, people expect us to be doing the tactics board.
But you used to also show, if there was ever any tactics boards up in the dressing rooms, you used to show them and go, this is their tactics for today. And I'd be sitting in the studio going, oh no. Did you ever get in trouble with anyone?
I did, yeah. Can you remember? I think it was Gary Megson was in manager of Bolton, I think. Might not have been at the time. But he had his team tactics up and he had criticisms about the opposition.
Right.
And we read them out. Or should I say, I read them out.
Yeah, you read them out.
And I can always remember you laughing in the studio at stuff like that. So we got into trouble for that one. But, you know, that was few and far between. But we got away with so much.
Most people embraced it, didn't they? Most of the clubs loved it.
Yeah.
It was just such a brilliant time then.
Oh, Soccer AM was brilliant back in the day.
Football just.
Well, Soccer AM's still good, I should say.
I still
work for Sky.
Yeah. No, it is. But what happened then, right at the beginning? I mean, Fenners is doing it now. He was a major part of the team, you know, back when I was doing it. But what was so exciting about it? It was like it was a new thing we were doing. We had so much access,
and we
were sort of able to push the boundaries a bit. And it was kind of you just did that so well.
Yeah.
You're still doing Goals on Sunday. Mm. It's a show that sadly, the only problem with me working Sundays, Chris, is I don't get to watch you. I'm sure if you like football.
Not really. Like you say, it's a different audience. And of course, I've done your show as well.
Yeah.
It's great fun.
It's good
Absolutely
fun, isn't it?
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's good. But it's such a big part of the football world, your show now, isn't it? It's like
football people watch our show,
right?
And which is a good thing and a credit. The way I analyse set plays and stuff like that, other teams take a lot of that off, which is good, which is great. We get lots of the players watch the show. I'm not saying we get a massive audience, but we get the football audience. That's what we get.
Yeah, you do, definitely. Mm. That's where you're going to go to watch the analysis, isn't it?
Yeah, hopefully,
because you've got a bit more time.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I get in at the crack of dawn. I cannot be influenced by what anybody else says. So on a Saturday night, I don't want to watch whatever's on the BBC. I can't remember what that show's called. It's been on for a long time.
Match of the day, maybe?
Don't swearing at me. So you don't want to be influenced by what anybody else says. So you've got to go in. And I look it through all the edits. When I tell everybody I watch the games through, I'm not watching 90 minutes. I'm watching the 3, 4, 5 minute edits that we show. And then I pick the analysis out of that and then do it in my own little way,
right,
which hopefully is different.
Mm. But it's also, I mean, I don't know if it's still that way, but I remember ages ago, it was basically your show. You were booking everyone to come on there. Mm. Are you still that?
I still do, hands on. Because I'm so in. The show means so much to me, you know. Occasionally, you know, I work with producers who don't have the same feel about the show, and it annoys me.
Right.
You know, it upsets me. But most of the time, everybody's on the same wavelength. You've got to make it a show. For someone who's doing it for their 19th season.
Wow.
Right? That's why it means so much to me. Who gets a show for 19 years?
And the players want to do it, don't they?
Yeah, the players are amazing. Declan Rice should have been on last weekend. But West Ham pulled him out, and I know he was upset about that. But they'd lost, and I fully understood that. And yeah, the players are great. We give them a little montage that they wouldn't ever get,
you know,
of their own abilities.
And it's a good place to cut your teeth if you want to do a bit of analysis, because you're going to look after them.
Yeah, you know, without a doubt. You know, if you don't want to say anything about it and you just feel uncomfortable about saying anything about a teammate or the opposition, then you don't say anything. If there's anything that any manager comes on and he doesn't want to talk about, we don't talk about it. We're not there. That's what sports news is there for. And that's what I try to get some of the producers to understand. This is a football show. We want football talk. We want them to reveal football talk. We don't want them to reveal scandal. We don't want them something that's going to be on sports news all day and make them feel uncomfortable after they've been on the show. Because we all say things in the heat of the moment. And if you're constantly reminded of something that you're not comfortable with, then you won't use the show again.
It's a really interesting time in Soccer M where we started getting lots of, you know, camera phones were starting to happen, more access to that type of thing, and people started sending in stuff on footballers. And I never put any of it on because I just thought I would like footballers to sit down and actually watch the game, watch the show, and not think I could get stitched up here badly.
Yeah.
I don't mind if they, I don't mind taking the mickey when they made a mistake on the pitch or something like that, but they didn't mind that either.
They laugh
but
at it was, that. Yeah. David Dunn, I remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah. David Dunn or, oh God, who's the Man City own goal?
Oh,
oh
yes.
What's his name?
God, used to play for Middlesbrough. I should know him. I played with him. Midfield when I was here, but
that'll come to us in a minute. Anyway, all that sort of stuff's absolutely fantastic. But yeah, I wanted them to. I remember right at the beginning of Soccer M days, I won't mention which player it was, but I took the mickey out right in my first season. I took the mickey out of this player, and I saw him out that night. And he went to me, I'm going to beat you up tonight, sort of thing. A slightly more aggressive way than that. And I was like, oh, mate, I went up to him later. I went, mate, I'm so sorry. What's the matter? He goes, you took the piss out of me on TV today. And I went, I'm so sorry. And he goes, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I've lost it with you. He goes, but by you taking the mickey out of me on the show, I'm not playing well at the moment. And you're putting more pressure on me. Mm. You've got to remember that my wife's watching this. My kids are watching it. My friends and family are watching it. And there's you on TV taking the mickey out of me. And after that, I thought, I'm never doing that again. Because you're mucking about with people's emotions. You're not helping them. And I firmly believe that, especially in the art and in the good old days, 99% of players go on that pitch every day, every week to play well. They're not going, I'm going to have a crap match today. That they might just have one because we all have bad performances, don't we? But they genuinely want to go on and play well. Yeah, and then you've got an idiot like me taking the mickey out of them. Yeah, it doesn't help at all.
No, not at all. What was that show that you did in the evenings as well?
Which, what, the had, All-Stars? Yeah,
All-Stars, yeah, that was a great show as well.
Yeah.
Was it a pub?
No, it was a church. But we ended up going up against a Chelsea European match and an England match on the run. I think it might have been two Chelsea matches and an England match on the run. It was a nightmare for us. We were my audience, and we were going up against football. It was bad planning. That was partly my fault. But people, the bands loved doing it. It was good fun.
I watched an episode just recently because... We were trying to play some VHS tapes that of the kids from Christmas to go on the video for Here's to Christmas. And so we found the video players in. We played one in, and your All-Stars was on there.
Really?
And Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank was the guest.
Wow.
Who else was the guest? And Sean Dyche was in the crowd.
Yeah, people used to come down. We had Carl Barat of the Libertines just come down every now and then and just watch it. It was such a great atmosphere on that show. It was a really good show, which I remember chatting away to the Arctic Monkeys once, and they were like, well, it was just before they'd sort of made it big time. They're like, we loved that show. Well, you know, they'd made it, but they were going, God, it was the show we used to watch going. And I was like, there was only 8 episodes of it. It was a good show at the time. But I loved that idea of back then mixing the music and the footballers and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So it was all good. How do you find when you're being a pundit, though, when you're doing your punditry, that you have to criticise a footballer? Do you find that hard or a manager?
No, I say it through the manager's point of view, which is the reason why I don't. So I say in the team meeting on Monday... Jose Mourinho will be saying this. So it's constructive. It's not, that's rubbish, diabolical, you shouldn't have done it that way, go away. I show, well, this is what he's done, this is what he should have done. And his manager will be telling him in the meeting on Monday, you should have stayed with him, you should have marked him tight, you should have done this or whatever. So I say it from that point of view. So it's acceptable. The one thing I never wanted when I played football was a manager coming in on a Monday morning and saying, you're rubbish, you're this, you're that and the other. Okay, I was. But tell me how I can get better. And the only manager, and I was in my 30s, was Howard Wilkinson. Howard Wilkinson, the first day I signed for Leeds, I put pen to paper and he said, right, faults. He said, what, you're sliding into challenges. You have to be 99.9% certain if you go to the ground that you're going to win the ball. If you get booked, I'll fine you £100 and I'll double it for every booking. If you get sent off, I'll fine you a week's wages. All of a sudden, it made me think straight away. Mm. Why am I trying to get the telescopic leg out and win something that's out of my reach and I'm bringing somebody down to the ground? And you think that, you know, I would love to have played for him earlier.
Yeah.
You know, for somebody to tell me that.
Do you miss playing football?
No. No. In a word, no. I had a fantastic career, 22 years, managed for 3 years. So that was 25 years in football.
25 good maths.
25 years in football and then fell straight into the TV. You know,
but the management thing, wasn't there? Because when you first started doing Sky, I remember everyone saying, well, he will go back to management soon.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone felt that you were just in there for a small stint. Obviously, you've made a major, massive career out of this. But was there never a chance to go back into management?
Yeah, there was. I had loads of offers.
Why didn't you do it?
Bradford. The reason, I think it was the family was the reason why. Because football, as a manager, consumes you 24 hours a day. You are not the same person. You know, I defy anybody to say, you know, even when I look at Pep Guardiola, you know, and I defy any of his family to say we would not love to have him more at home than what he actually is, because football just consumes you and you're striving to do well. You're striving to make everybody happy, not just the chairman and the directors, the whole supporters, your own team, your own ambitions. You know, where am I today? Right, I'm there. You know, what can I do? You know, the family have got a get-together, but I can't make it today because, and even when you get there, you're not there because your mind is elsewhere. You're thinking, what are those players up to tonight? What are they doing? Are they looking after themselves? Are they out enjoying themselves? You know, what's going on? Tomorrow, will I get somebody sent off? Will it change the tactics? Will it change the game plan? All of those things that consume your mind. All of a sudden, I was hankering to go back into football management. I had offers from Gillingham, Bradford, possibility of Middlesbrough. And then all of a sudden, my wife said, you're enjoying doing what you're doing. You know, we like you doing what you're doing. Why don't you give it a little bit longer before you decide to go back? And then, of course, I went past the point of no return.
Do you love it? Your job now?
My life has just got so busy that my wife thought, after 22 years playing football, she was going to get me back. She's lost me even more. So now I'm actually, instead of being away from home 2 or 3 days a week, I'm actually only at home 2 or 3 days a week.
What's funny about you though is when we did, you know, people in football are quite, you know, obviously we both know a lot of footballers. They tend to think, oh, is everyone, all the lads going to take the mickey out of me or whatever. Everything we asked you to do on Soccer AM, you basically went, yeah, I'll do that. That sounds fun. That's were you always like that? That you didn't care about what you did?
I wouldn't say I don't care. I just don't take myself too seriously. I think that's the key. And that's why, you know, I've been okay-ish doing all the shows that I've done since I went in to the TV. I don't want to win any of these quiz shows. I want to go on and have a good time and be entertaining. And I think that is the key. I do care. Of course I care. You know, people say things, you know, we're only human. But it just doesn't worry me. I just think, well, I'm enjoying it. They can't stop me doing what I'm doing. The jealousy and everything that people have when you do well comes through, shines through. Not everyone's going to like it. You understand all that. If you decided to start worrying about what other people think, then you wouldn't do what you're doing.
Yeah, because I suppose the ex-pros are still as competitive as when they were playing the game and they're watching you. There was a time a few months ago, I switched on my Saturday evening TV. You're on Michael McIntyre, then you're on something else, then you're Ninja Warriors. I mean, you're like, you've moved from Saturday morning to Saturday evening pretty seamlessly, and that's pretty huge stuff. I've never got on Saturday night TV.
Yeah, well, it is, and it's so enjoyable to do. And I understand people are envious. You know, I can understand players who were a lot better than I was, who played for their countries and things like that, and think I should be doing that. I'm not stopping you doing that. I'm not stopping you. I'm getting the opportunity because that opportunity is being presented to me, not because they want you. If they wanted you, they'd go and get you. And that's how I look
and
at
you
it.
You do work really hard. I can vouch for that. You always put the effort in.
That's the thing. My dad was a grafter. My wife's very clever. My oldest son is clever like his mum. My youngest son, he builds apps for a living. That's it. He takes after his mum. Right. But my youngest son, who takes after me, has got, he works for Sky as a cameraman. He's got a carp fishing lake with 15 pegs, and he drives a hearse or pallbearers a couple of times a week. So he's exactly like me. You know, it's just built in.
Yeah. What's the industry made of you doing an album then? Other pros thought of that?
Well, obviously, we had to keep it quiet until the launch. So we've only been launched a week. I was with Jeff Stelling yesterday, and he absolutely loves it. And he was absolutely gutted. He said, no, everything you do turns to gold. But in a nice way, if you know what I mean. I'm chuffed for you. I'm really, I hope it gets to number one. So... fingers crossed.
Jeff's career's been pretty good as well, hasn't it? I mean, he's what a legend he is.
Oh, without a doubt, you know.
I think the thing about you guys is I feel we own you, as in you're one of us. I think that's it. You've crossed over. Like, you talk about Match of the Day. I love all the boys on Match of the Day, by the way. But the Soccer Saturday thing, and especially you, Chris, because you did Soccer AM and you're doing all this sort of stuff. I think we think you're ours, one of us. Mm. You know, and I think it's quite hard with football.
I wouldn't be where I am without that Soccer AM thing. That's the thing. If you piece things together... You know, that the popularity that you get from doing stuff like yours, you know, if it turns to crap, then that's it, finished with. But if it goes well in the way that it did, people look forward to it every single week. So you piece all those great bits together throughout your career and say, yeah, I did that. We did it for what? 6, 7, 8 years long time, or whatever. Yeah. We started off.
11 years,
we had so much fun doing it. Now, if we hadn't have done that, would I still be where I am today? And I always look back and fate.
Well, do you know what I think? And I don't need you to comment on this. I know you still work for Sky and in the football industry massively. But when I look back, for some reason the other day, Matt Latisse had a go at Soccer M. And so it all blew up on Twitter about holding back wages or something. And he said to the Soccer M boys, when you have a bad show, you hold back wages. And then are you going to not take your wages? The whole thing blew up. And then people were discussing Soccer M, and people started putting clips on there. And the one thing that about Soccer M, which especially in my day, we just were having so much fun because we all love football and the industry. It's now so serious that sometimes I tune on the TV and I'm like, Jesus Christ, what's going on here? It's like, wow, what happened to the smiles and the laughs and the idea? Because I think the majority of us still go, I think social media has been bad for football because the majority of us still go to football. You know, I go to Chelsea and we lose and I go, we're not losing anymore actually under Frank, but you go to Chelsea, you're just all having a laugh with your mates watching it and stuff like that. And it's like, it's all a good joke. The idea that everyone goes home and sulks for 7 days afterwards, I just think it's a bit of a myth nowadays, you know? I mean, that probably used to happen years ago when you were in Sheffield or something and that was your one outlet. But people have got a lot more outlets now.
Without a doubt.
Get their thing. And I think that the industry's got so serious, and I think the fun is what people want, and that's what you
the
bring
fun,
to
the fun, And everybody's looking for you to say something out of context.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing about social media.
But it's also making mistakes. One of the biggest things you've ever done is not notice someone getting sent off, which is amazing. You're watching a match and not getting sent off, but you know,
we had so many laughs before that, didn't we? I had so many gaffes and you would show them.
Yeah.
In fact, I owe you my career as an outside broadcaster because of the fact that the first ever broadcast that we did for Soccer Saturday was at Oxford United versus Walsall. Oxford United versus Walsall was the first ever Soccer Saturday, and the cameraman from Oxford got there at about 1:45, and I'm doing a live to Jeff, the first ever one, 1:45, and the cameraman came and he said, "You're in my spot." And we went, no, Sky have now got the rights to the football league. Yeah, but I've been in that position for 25 years. Move. And we said, oh, we can't. We're doing a live broadcast in a minute. And as we came through to Jeff, I did the two-way with Jeff, and this bloke tried to cross the camera immediately. So I held him back with my arm. And I went, "Sorry, Jeff, but that won't happen again." We're through gritted teeth, and I did the report, and you showed it the following Saturday on Soccer AM, and Kamara Cam was made. It's still
brilliant.
Named after me, yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
oh, that's
forgotten about
fantastic.
That. I nearly forgot about
I've
it.
I've forgotten
yeah.
all about yeah. that. I just used to love all the mistakes yeah. and stuff. I just used to think it was for all of the things which happened. I love football. I love the sport. I love the idea that it was so live and everything about it. You never know what was going to happen. I thought that was all fantastic. So, yeah, it was glory days back then. And I had Helen Chamberlain on this podcast. We went on for hours, actually, when we did it. But I did it through plotted time, through the history of the show. And what was really interesting is at one stage we could get all the players from all the teams, as in we could get them because they were on a Saturday. If they weren't playing, they could come on, or if they were injured, they could come on. And apart from Manchester United, Sir Alex Ferguson would never ever let us have a player. So every week I used to say to the guys, "Phone up Man United and see who they can offer us." And I used to do it every week just to try and wind them up. And they had to toe the line. Yeah, yeah. "We'll get back to you." And every week it was, you can't have one of them. But then slowly, Gerard Houllier said they don't take football seriously enough because of all the stuff which was going on. And then Wenger sort of followed suit with Arsenal and started closing the door so we couldn't have those players. And one by one, we were pretty much left with Charlton and Leicester, who were the clubs who were going, "You can have everybody," you know. But I think that's why they were successful at the time. You know, I know Leicester went on to win the league after that, but they were successful clubs. They had a great, you know, team spirit and club spirit and everything, and they were allowed to come on the show. Then Jose Mourinho turned up, started watching the show, and we were doing the crossbar challenge. He got John Terry to phone the show and say, "We want to do it," because he understood media and how important it was to get the media on his side. So it was really, but it was an interesting time in those days because clubs started closing and we weren't allowed access to the players. It was strange.
Yeah, that's my biggest criticism of Sky. Because of all the money that they're giving to these football clubs, how on earth have they not negotiated the access to the players?
Yeah.
How on earth? You know, that just baffles me. It completely baffles me. When you look at the American football, the access that they've got, and the players understand that being a part of the media is so important. How can you give them all that many millions and then they refuse to do interviews? It's just a joke.
NBA, they actually walk into the dressing room, don't they? Right at the end of the game, they just stroll in there, and they're getting dressed.
And the players accept it as part of the media. You know, they want to promote themselves, not when they're finished playing. They want to promote themselves as they're playing. So when they eventually get to finish playing, they've been an active part of the media.
Mm. How good were you at football?
It's a hard thing for anybody to say. You've got to ask managers and stuff like that. You know, I captained every single club I played for except Luton.
Wow.
You know?
Why? Why did they choose you as the captain?
Well, I was a voice. I was a voice in the dressing room. I was a voice out on the pitch. I was an organiser. When I went to Luton, Trevor Peake was the captain. And you wouldn't want to change that. He was a good captain as well. But every team. I even had one game as captain of Leeds,
How did you get into it? Remind us that story because it's a good one.
Into football at all. Yeah. Yeah, well, my dad made me. Can you imagine making your kids do anything?
No.
My dad made me join the Royal Navy. So I had the opportunity to be an apprentice footballer at Middlesbrough. And I went home and I said, "Dad, you know, I've got a chance. Dave Richardson's going to come around tomorrow and see you," because we didn't have a phone or anything. And Dave Richardson came around to see me dad. He was the head of Middlesbrough Boys. And my dad said, "No, he's going in the Navy." He made my brother join the Army. He said, "He's going in the Navy." So he made me join the Navy. And that's where fate took a hand, because the Navy football team trained at Tor Point in Devon, where I was sent to. And I went down to watch them play. the Navy team, and I asked the coach if I could join in, and he said, no, three reasons. And I said, what? One, you're only here for a 6 months trial because you got the decision at the end of 6 months where you could walk away or they could tell you you're not good enough. Two, you're black and these lot will kick lumps out of you because, like I said, that was the middle 70s. And three, you're too skinny and frail. Well, I'd been playing men's football from the age of 14 on a Sunday morning, so I can handle myself. But he obviously didn't know that. And then I kept going back down, and I was running around the track one day, and he came to me and he said, oh, I'm two players short for a practice match. You play on one side and I'll play on the other. You just stay out on the wing, keep yourself out of trouble, and you'll be fine. Anyway, I scored two goals, and they tried to kick lumps out of me, and they couldn't get anywhere near me. And I got drafted straight into the team. And I said to him, I thought you said I couldn't do that in 6 months. He went, well, we'll sort that out, don't we? And so we played against Portsmouth, reserve team, and I scored two goals against them. And the coach, Ray Crawford, used to play for Ipswich, Colchester, asked the Navy coach how old I was. He said he's 16. So he went to Ian St. John and said, I want to buy a lad out of the Navy. He said, how much is it going to cost?
What, Ian St. John from St. Greavesy?
Ian St. John, yeah, oh. He was the manager of Pompey, yeah. So he said, how much is it going to cost? He said, £200. So they bought me out of the Navy for £200. It still goes down as the worst deal in the club's history. and the rest is history, yeah. And Ian St. John, 2 months later, gave me my debut against Luton. And I scored on my second game away at Bolton.
Do you wish you were playing now? Do you wish it was in this era with the money and the...
No. You can't change anything. That's what I said to you. Fate plays a massive part in your life. If history was changed in any way, shape or form, I wouldn't have the wonderful kids that I've got. I wouldn't have the wonderful grandkids that I've got. So you cannot change anything.
I once spoke to Mickey Thomas about this, Mickey and Joey Jones. I love them both when they played at Chelsea, and I've become friends with them. And I was having a chat with them about it, and I said, would you change it? You know, and they said, no, because we had so much fun playing football, the adventures we had and the excitement. And Mickey said, sometimes I look at some of the pros and I think they're not having as much fun as we had in our day, where it literally was all about the team and trying to get victories and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It has become more of a individual sport.
It has, but it was a different way of life back then. You know, we would play a game on a Tuesday night away from home or whatever. We'd stop at the off license, load all the cans and the beers and, you know... get home. You know, now it's like pub football, that, isn't it? You know, but that's how it was, you know. On a Saturday, as soon as the game was finished, everyone would go into the bar. You know, you're dehydrated as it is, but you'd drink beer.
Yeah.
Sunday afternoon, you'd go and have a session with the lads after Sunday lunch. You know, on a Monday, you'd put a plastic bag on to sweat it out, dehydrating yourself even more.
I played football against... I played in this. We used to have that team, the Badgers. Do you remember? And we had an away trip to Spain, and Frank Worthington was playing. What a player he was, even then.
Oh, great.
And Emlyn Hughes turned up playing on the other time. We were playing against a team of ex-pros, and Emlyn Hughes played the whole game in a plastic bin liner. What the hell are you doing?
Yeah, sweating, getting a sweat. like, it's just amazing.
That thought process, isn't it? It's mad.
It's a joke. When I always remember this. All pre-season you used to do cross countries, right? Before you even got a ball out. So for 2 weeks you'd be running miles and miles. But they would stop you drinking water after you've done the cross countries because it would give you stomach cramps.
Right.
So you not only dehydrated yourself, you couldn't put the fluid back in. And this is the physios and the... You know, the sports scientists back in that game saying, no, don't do it.
That's unbelievable. One of the things that, I'm going to talk to you about this, racism in the game. I won't go on to it. There's a couple of clips online involving you and sort of the racism stuff. And it's changed so much, hasn't it, the game? And I think one of the things that I think is interesting, Patterson Joseph came on this podcast and he said, we end up talking about how actually sport, football, has really helped because of the amount of black players who end up playing, mm-hmm. that this sort of white communities, to use that expression, start going, oh, well, we like these guys. And mm-hmm. do you think that football's actually, because there's all the negative sides, as we mm-hmm. know, there's positive sides to football as well, isn't there?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, when I started back off in the middle 70s, it was horrendous, you know, absolutely horrendous. There was Portsmouth had a national front element in the crowd, so not only did they boo you off when you were rubbish, they boo you onto the pitch in the first place when your name was mentioned. Only a small, you know, a couple of hundred, 300 or whatever. But they would make themselves heard, you know. Programmes like Alf Garnett, Love Thy Neighbour, the N-word was regularly used. So you'd go in the dressing room the following day and the lads would be talking about it. And they'd go, oh, you don't mind, no, do you, Cammy? You know, you're not one of them, are you? Well, I am, to be honest. But,
yeah.
You know, but you couldn't say anything. You could not say anything. The difference is now, and this is what annoys me, and it annoys Viv Anderson, John Barnes, Luther Blissett, Howard Gale, people from before. We work so hard as trailblazers to play football, right? To make it. We didn't think about it then, because you don't think about it then when you're young. You're just trying to make a name for yourself. You're trying to work hard as you possibly can. But we were trailblazers as minority black players in the game. There was speckles here, there and everywhere. You know, I was the second black player to play for Portsmouth, first black player to play for Swindon, first black player to play for Brentford. So, you know, there was only spatterings of black players around. So you work so hard to actually be on the pitch, and then all of a sudden, people are telling you that the players today should walk off the pitch. No, they should not. We work too hard for that. We work so hard. Get the racists out the ground and keep the players on the pitch. That has got to be the motto. I know they followed protocol in the Bulgaria game, and the third protocol should have been the players walking off the pitch. They stayed on the pitch. They didn't win. England players didn't win, but the racists didn't win. And that was the key thing to it all. If they'd have gone off that pitch, the racists would have won, but the racists got kicked out of the ground. The Haringey Borough game against Yeovil, where the players came off the pitch because the Haringey Borough manager said, I would just like to thank 99.9% of those Yeovil supporters were fantastic. So 0.1% got the players into the players' minds and got that game called off. Why weren't they just kicked out of the ground? The two people that were arrested later in the week, why weren't they identified by their own supporters? That's them there. Get them out of the ground and play on the game. Has that game been replayed, Yeovil? Yes, it has. Does anybody know about it? Has anybody been bothered about the significance that was the first game where players went off the pitch? No, not at all. They don't care one jot. The only way that racists can make themselves heard is through football. In society, society does not want to know. Doesn't want to know in any way, shape or form. But the big platform, England games, we can be heard. If we can stop that football match, we've made a point. So in society, racism goes on every single day. As we sit here now, something will be happening where somebody is getting racially abused for whatever reason. Will we hear about it? Not at all. But football, the conveyor belt, as soon as it happens in there, wow, everybody hears about it. So FIFA and UEFA, they try to make sanctions. But what you have to remember, they're football organisations. So they don't want to ban Bulgaria because they're a football organisation. So that decision needs to be taken out of their hands. Let somebody else decide what we should do with Bulgaria supporters who abuse England players. The thing, what should have happened is they should have been kicked out of the competition straight away. That would have been brilliant. But like I said, UEFA are a football organisation. They're not there to govern racism. Anyway, sorry about that. It's a bit too...
No, I do. It's a really interesting point of view on it. And what's the kickback from it? Do people agree with you, or are some people not happy with your...
No, some people are not happy. Like I said, it's 50-50. You know, people are saying, you know, I keep reading Darren Lewis. We've got to walk off the pitch. We've got to walk... No, you haven't. We've worked too hard for you to walk off the pitch. What is that going to solve?
What was it like when you were playing then?
Horrific.
I remember, Chelsea fan, I remember Paul Cannavale being in the team sheet and people in the pubs talking about it, and I won't use the language, and it was horrific. Paul Cannavale later comes out and says the depression he went through because of being rejected, really, you know, playing for a big club like Chelsea and being rejected by the fans because of his colour. It's horrific. But this was commonplace in football grounds back in the
80s. Oh, of course it was. In the dressing room. In the dressing room, our own teammates, you know. I knew people. I would get in the bath at Portsmouth, and obviously you can't name any names, would get out when you got in because it was a communal bath back in the day. So, you know, the first time you think, oh, well, maybe they've just finished. The second time you start to clock onto it. And the third time, you know, so you wait for them to finish in the bath before you go in. And the scum used to sit round the corners of the bath in those days. They would, even though you washed yourself, you were never clean.
Those baths. Wow.
So, yeah, so, and playing against people in the 70s, you know, you made a bad tackle. The first way they would say is you're an, you know, do on your effing zones. Oop.
Don't mind you can do it. Yeah, it's fine.
Do on your effing zone. So, yeah. You know. You know, and then you get into the middle 80s and the N-word goes a little bit, you know, and people are still calling you a black so-and-so and, you know, bananas and all that type of stuff. It's just, you know, it was amazing. But that's how it was, you know. Mm. You know, when I met my wife, her dad, I wouldn't say he was racist, but he'd never been involved with a black person, right? So it was uncomfortable to begin with, very uncomfortable. But once he got to know me and realised inside that person is exactly the same as a white person or whatever colour you want to be.
That's why I think sport's so important. So someone like Raheem Sterling, for instance, he's scoring goals for fun for England, and England fans go, yeah, we're supporting him. And that's where... I remember actually walking through Brixton once, years ago, when I was doing Soccer M, this huge black guy starts making his way towards me. I'm thinking, oh, shit, like that. He's making a beeline. He comes over, he goes, Tim, I just want to say I love your show. Thanks so much for doing it. And I go, that's great. He goes, you're the only show on TV we're putting black people on. And I've not even thought about that. As a chat show, we were not only, by the way, but every week we had black, but we didn't even think about it. It's just, you know, footballers are black, musicians are black, actors are black. It was never a conscious decision. Yeah. It was just, these are the people we want to have on the show. Yeah. But it meant so much to someone in Brixton going, okay, football, they're just, you know, they're doing it. But as Patterson Joseph said, as I said at the start of this, it's why I love your point of view there. Sport is so important for breaking down barriers because we like watching football and we like watching our cricket and we like watching our rugby. The more we're mixing in those scenarios, the better it is.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah.
I love that. I love that point of view though, that you've worked really hard to be on the pitch, because that is so true. Because there's managers out there who didn't want to pick black people, players.
No, it's all right. No, they did. You know, you change your manager throughout your reign or whatever, and you know, I had a sixth sense when I was a manager going into a boardroom, and I knew people in that boardroom, you know, say after a game, who weren't comfortable with me being in there. And that's a sense that, you know, that my dad had. You know, my dad, one thing that my dad had all the time was shiny shoes, brand new shoes, right? And the reason why he had shiny, brand new shoes, because nobody would ever look him in the eye. They would always look down at his feet. So he said, the most important thing for me was to have a decent pair of shoes. So when they looked down, they didn't see a scruffy pair of feet or whatever, because they would never look at me in the face.
I wrote a column once though, Chris, about I won't go into the whole scenario of it, but about how football needs to grow up a bit because it's on TV so much. And I hate when the ball goes to the corner flags and everyone's leaning over doing the wanker sign at the players and stuff. And I got a lot of criticism of football fans saying it's our right. And, you know, it's the working class man's right to boo and to shout offensive things and stuff. And I was just like, do you know what? It doesn't happen in other sports. Why can't we grow the sport up a bit? Because we all love the sport. You don't have to have... And the majority of people aren't standing there being offensive to the footballers constantly. Mm. But then I also said in the article, and I'd like to know what you think of this, the players need to sort themselves out as well. Because at the time, there's a lot of players and they still do it running up to the ref. And you can clearly see them go, you fucking cunt, to the ref, or you fucking whatever. And you're like looking at them going, guys, I'm watching this with my kids at home. And you can clearly see what you're saying to the ref. This is no way. Don't you think the ref at some stage, we see it in rugby, we see it in all sports, at some stage should be able to go, right, we need to put a stop to this.
Yeah, that's a fair comment now. Like you said, it is important. You know, they are role models. They are going to have to be educated and be told that this is unacceptable now in this day and age. You know, like you said, when I played, there was one camera on the halfway line. You know, now there's 20 cameras at every game. And you pick up on everything that people are saying. So, you know, we all get upset from time to time. You know, a decision goes against you. And sometimes it's understandable that, you know, you players can get angry and upset.
Of course. Well, they've got to be able to control it, haven't they?
Absolutely.
In your day, when the lino wasn't looking and there was no camera on, centre-halves would kick strikers.
And do all Sam sorts Allardyce of stuff to them. I always remind Sam of this. My second ever game, he nutted the back of my head, right?
Wow.
Yeah, I was playing up front with George Graham. I made my debut on the Saturday at home to Luton. Played alongside George Graham, and then we were away at Bolton on the Tuesday night, and he had a big centre-half alongside with him. But Big Sam was only probably a year older than me, 2 years older than me, 19, but he was tough as old boots. And I remember the ball being with our goalkeeper or something, and then this centre-half just nutted me on the back of the head. I thought, what's going on here? And I realised there and then I'm going to have to toughen up to play this game.
I had this conversation with Michael Owen. The years ago when I played football, obviously I didn't play at a good enough level, but they said, when you make your way up into the pro leagues, Tim, or get that, it's harder. And I said to Michael Owen, do you think it's easier now to play Premier League football, like violence-wise, than it is Sunday League? He goes, yeah, because there's cameras everywhere. You can't do anything. Because, you know, in his days when he first started, and obviously when you were playing, there was digs and there was pinches.
Yeah, yeah.
And all sorts of stuff.
Well, I was a tough tackling midfielder. I was a goal-scoring midfielder. And then when I went to Swindon to play for Lou Macari, he dropped me back to a defensive midfielder. And then, you know, I like to tackle auto.
Yeah, you did, and there's plenty of footage of that online. We're going to get on to our questions. Just quickly before that, I can't get you on without mentioning VAR or VAR, whichever way you're calling it. It's not working. I think we've all established that at the moment, but it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, I would scrap it if I was them. The reason why I would say scrap it is because they need to go back to the drawing board and start again. You know,
right.
I'm an advocate of VAR, but the way it's been implemented at the moment is wrong.
Don't you think it should be enclosed in the stadium? So just get rid of that. Where's that place they all go to? Bletchley Park. What is it called?
Stockley Park.
Stockley Park. Where's that? What's that for?
Enigma
people, all right. Well, they need them to sort out this problem, decode it. We don't not understand it. But don't you think it'd be better if the ref just did it in the stadium? So he if he wants to check his decision, he can go and look, and or the third official can let him know.
It's hard to say now because it's not working. If you switch it to that almost immediately, then we'd have problems. I think basically we should just say, look, we've tried it. It's not quite worked how we wanted it to work. Let's go back to let the referee make the decisions on the day, and then hopefully we'll trial it between now and the end of the season, and we'll bring the technology back for next season. But that's not going to happen. It's going to stick with it, and we're, you know, I can always remember I went to Stockley Park in the close season, and the demonstration that they did was flawless, absolutely flawless,
right.
And I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Right. And Bianca Westwood, we came out. And Bianca Westwood, who I work with on Sky, she said to me, what do you think? I said, it'll be carnage. She went, oh, but it was good though, wasn't it? I said, yeah, it was good, but I'm telling you now, it will be carnage. It will be carnage. If they're not going to allow the referee to go over to the monitor, it will be carnage. And it unfortunately, is. I've been right.
It's funny because all the pundits used to work, the problem, we need VAR because of inconsistency. Now, yeah. VAR, the problem with it is it's inconsistent. Oh.
It's like... Well, the one thing that they thought they'd got right was if it touches your arm, then we're going to give...
A penalty.
Disallow the goal, sorry. Oh, disallow right, yeah. the goal. Okay. So then you had the problem with the Newcastle game where Newcastle scored a goal right. against Watford because the manager lost his job, where it came off Shah's hand, arm or whatever, and they scored from it. Right, so that was one. And then the Liverpool offside where they said, because I got a call after 2 weeks, it's not just offside or it's not just onside. It's either on or it's off.
Yeah.
They've got this now off to a tee. There's no grey areas at all. Okay. So then Firmino scores against Aston Villa where he's onside, but they've got the line wrong. So now all of a sudden, even the ones that they were priding themselves and patting themselves on the back on are not working.
Chris, well, they're not going to get rid of it, so we'll have to see what happens next season.
Yeah, I just think maybe get themselves an ex-pro there with them who could understand some of the situations. You know, I know it was horrific, you know, what happened to Gomez the other day, but an ex-pro would have been able to, you know, to say, that's not malicious. You know, you don't go out to do something like that, you know.
I've always thought that about officials anyway. We should try and fast-track ex-pros. But
just to help them. Not necessarily sane, but if you've got VAR and you've got an ex-referee and you've got an ex-pro with him, we can bounce just stuff off. What do you think of that? You might get a different opinion.
All right, Chris, I'm conscious of your time. Let's bang through these questions. What one piece of advice would you like to give our listeners that has been invaluable to your life?
Rob McCaffrey, when I moved into Sky, said to me, be yourself. Right, the first report I did on Soccer Saturday was, I told you about it, Oxford versus Walsall.
Yeah.
And he said, I watched that on your show the following week, and you were like Kate Adie. You were like Kate Adie doing a report. That's not the cameo I know, just be yourself.
And it's worked.
And it worked, yeah.
Brilliant, what a great piece of advice. What's something you think people should know?
I had TB when I was a kid.
Wow.
And I've been asthmatic all my career, all my life,
I should
say.
You should have been a Tour de France rider then.
Yeah, and people don't know, inhaler, I have to take it all the time.
Wow. Did that affect your football career?
You're the first to know, not at all. I made myself fitter and stronger than anybody else.
That's pretty good. Any life hacks?
I don't like people who are rude. Manners mean everything to me. I wouldn't allow my kids to be rude and mannerless, and I don't like it when I'm in situations and bad manners. That affects me.
Mm. You always seem really happy.
Yeah, I am.
What's the key to that?
I'm enjoying life. Life's great. You know, obviously I've had ups and downs, as you quite rightly said. The downs were back in the day. You know, now my life is brilliant.
Can you recommend a book?
Right, I haven't even read my own autobiography. My wife tells me all the time, a person who doesn't read lives one life. A person who does read lives 1,000 and more lives, right?
Yeah.
So I should read. But, like I said, I haven't even read my own autobiography.
Do you watch football every night?
Watch football all the time. We have separate rooms. Me and my wife at home. One where I go and watch the football. And then when we go to bed at 10 o'clock at night, I go to bed and I watch Coronation Street and Emmerdale with her.
All right. Did we ask you, I don't know whether I gave you this question. It's a new one. Mark's invented, which is, have you changed your mind about anything? Did I give you that one?
Yes. Have I changed my mind about anything? Yes, actually. About the abuse I suffered growing up. I just took it as part of life. And now I'm thinking, I shouldn't have accepted all that. I really shouldn't. I should have made a stand. You know, maybe if I'd have been a voice back in the day, I doubt it would have changed anything. But maybe because I'm nice about it these days, and I just go, oh well, that was then and this is now. I just think maybe I should have said something.
I understand what you're saying, but now you're in a place where you've said something which I think is really smart on this about you've earned the right to be on the football pitch, don't leave it. I think that's so powerful.
Mm.
John Barnes talks a lot about this stuff as well, yeah. Doesn't he? We need to listen all the to old people school, like you and
all
him
the old school yeah. boys are saying it, you know. Whereas, you know, these, like I said, all these people are coming out, walk off the pitch, walk off the pitch. No, you'll get too many copycat.
Yeah. Mm. Stay on the pitch. Final question. What's the meaning of life?
The meaning of life is enjoyment. I just absolutely love everything I do now. Like I said, it is incredible. You know, it's who'd have thought that, you know, this time last year, I was thinking about going, well, deciding whether to go on All Together Now, the show with Rob Beckett and Jerry Halliwell, that I would have a Christmas album out this year with a 22-piece swing band. Enjoy life. Yeah. I'm loving life. I'm really, really enjoying it. I do understand it's hard on the family. I don't get to see them as much as I like, but I keep telling my wife, it's not going to last forever. But she keeps saying, you've been saying that for the last 22 years.
Chris, you're a national treasure. Thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thanks for having me on,
and the
Tim.
Album's out now.
And thanks for called, everything. Like I said, I wouldn't be where I am today without doing that stuff for Soccer AM.
Oh, Chris, pleasure. I got more out of it than you did. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you. That was Chris Kamara. I love Chris Kamara. I like spending time with Chris Kamara. He is a national treasure, isn't he?
I want him around all the time.
Do you know what I thought was the best bit of that interview, though, by the way, is I was not going to ask him
was
about
it your questions?
Yes,
was it when you were speaking?
It was when it was all about me. No, what was fascinating about that interview was the when I asked him about racism. I've had a chat with Chris Kamara about racism before, a few times actually, and it's always been fascinating. But I hadn't ever heard that perspective on it.
No.
And it, because what they used to have to go through was horrific in the day. And
I'm so moving.
I'm so glad, because it's such a powerful message. And, you know, it's really good that I'm so glad I asked that question in the end.
Yeah, because I don't think you were going to, were you?
No, I was just worried about it, because I was just like, you know. Yeah, it just seems a bit sort of cliche sometimes. And yeah. I've spoken to him about it off air, as I say, a few times. But I'm just so glad. It was such a great answer to that. And God, just thoroughly good, enjoyable interview. I so hope his music does well.
Oh, mate, so do I. I love that.
Yeah,
I love that.
Fantastic stuff.
I'm genuine. This isn't just, you know, because he's just been on. I'm genuinely going to get that album for Christmas Day. And can you imagine that on Christmas Day while you're having your
brilliant. And it was so nice as well to just go through a little trip down memory lane, because I remember the show was quite hectic. It was, to begin with, it was 4 hours
Soccer
long.
AM, you're talking.
Soccer AM. To begin with, it was 4 hours long. Then it got to 3 hours long. And I think Chris came on board when it was 3 hours long. We used to throw to these matches and do these live link-ups. And it was always like, what are we going to get? And with Chris, he just delivered every week. And it was that one moment that I was like, you know, I could throw over to Chris and you just knew he was going to, we were going to have fun. He just loved having fun on the show, and he just loved football as well. The whole thing was absolutely amazing, and, you know, absolute pleasure to have worked with him back in those days. Okay, this podcast is sponsored by Cooker. It's spelt Quicker, but pronounced Cooker. 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. Want to thank them so much for sponsoring the podcast, because it does help keeping it around, keeping it afloat. 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. It does your hot water, your cold water, your 100 degree boiling hot water. So it also does chilled filtered water and chilled sparkling filtered water, which Mark absolutely loves.
And it looks cool.
Looks cool, great addition.
I love the design
to your
of that
kitchen.
Thing.
You can go to cooker.co.uk. It's spelled Q-U-O-O-K-E-R. It's Dutch, you know, and that's why it's spelled that way, but pronounced Cooker. I bet Cooker isn't really the way you pronounce it. That's as close as you get. It's probably Hooker.
I think I've said this before as well, but what I was really impressed with, you showed me like the inner workings. It's just a little thing in your sort of under sink cupboard. I was really impressed by even they even made that look stylish, and yeah, no one ever sees it. It's like the really fine details they do, I think, are pretty cool.
It's all very stylish. It's all very stylish. Listen, let us know. We'd like to hear from you, whatever you're, whatever it is that you're doing. You can email us at dearlovejoypodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at Tim Lovejoy or Instagram, @TimLovejoy_official, I believe it is. Contact us in all those ways. Mark has promised me soon he's going to make a jingle for the end. Well, he hasn't actually. I'm making that up. He's not promised me at all. But I want to make a little jingle at the end so I don't have to stumble my way through all that. And it just makes it sound a bit more pro right at the end with a little bit of music.
I think that would be unfair on the listeners to make them think that we're pro.
All right, that's it for this week. We'll see you all very soon for another podcast. Peace and love, Joy.
Bye. Bye.